have about Al Milton, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of Traditions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm a member of that group in good standing, and I have a couple of my group members here to prove that tonight, Gail and Carol. My sobriety date is April 28, 1973. Last July, I was 83, and I've been sober half my life. That doesn't impress a lot of folks, but it impresses me and Gail. Anybody here ever heard of Dr. Tom O'Sullivan? I'm sure he used to talk a lot, and he said he didn't know if he's going to make a one cup of water talk or a two cup of water talk, so I got to have that water. Mount Eagle means an awful lot to me, and it means an awful lot to me to talk tonight, because every one of you in this room has affected mine and Joanne's life in a real positive way. All of you. We've been coming here for a long time. It means a lot to me to be here tonight. I want to introduce my designated driver. We got a group in Memphis that goes around, and my sponsor and some of the rest of us, about 8 or 9 of us usually sometime, we go to meetings and one of us talk. We decided that George was our designated driver because he's got the most drunk driving. It's 8. He had to be the drunk driver. And I want to thank the board of Mount Eagle for having me here. I served on that board for a long time, and it meant an awful lot to me and still does today. Mount Eagle will always have a special place in my life. Before I start, I want to tell you that I think alcoholism is an illness. And I think in my case it was hereditary. My grandfather was an alcoholic, my brother. My uncles were all alcoholics, and I believe in my case, and it may only be for me. Would I have been put someplace where I could never got a drink of alcohol in my whole life, I wouldn't have been as much of an alcoholic. Now, I got sober with a guy that said he caught his disease drinking whiskey on bar stools, and I said, John, I believe it. But I think when I came in the world, I was an alcoholic. And when I took my first drink at maybe 15, 16, all it did was activate the illness. It activated the illness. And I got to do one thing before I start, because Holly asked me not to. Holly told me a joke yesterday. I don't usually tell jokes. She said, Milton, do you know the mating call of a Southern Belle? And I said, no, I don't believe I do. And she said, I believe I'm getting drunk. Holly told me that. I think it makes sense, don't it? What an appropriate place to say that at. I was born down in Holmes County, Mississippi. We didn't have nothing. We didn't have running water, electricity. I've heard it mentioned here this week. I'm a son of a sharecropper. We didn't have running water, used outdoor toilets, no automobiles, no nothing. And you see, I didn't know any different. I thought everybody lived like that. And they got a big word now that's called living in a dysfunctional home. And I guarantee if you live with a bunch of drunks, it's going to be dysfunctional. I promise you that. My daddy moved us up to Memphis when I was about maybe 13. He went to work for the Railway Express. He brought us up to the big city, and I was scared to death. Didn't know how to act, how to dress, had no clothes much, had nothing. Moved in a house and project in Memphis. Had to go to one of them city schools, and I was scared to death, hated it. But you see, I discovered the one thing that make me be and do and act like my peer group. It's called champagne velvet beer. And I heard Doris say it last night. You know, Dr. Silkworth, who was not an alcoholic, said men and women drink essentially because we like the effect produced by alcohol. And if I were to leave here tonight, I'll leave here tomorrow, and by God's grace, I hope I never do take another drink. If I were to stop, get me a can of beer. In the beginning, I'd like what it done for me, wouldn't I? I always did. I didn't drink much in high school because I hated it too bad. All I wanted was O-U-T. Same thing I wanted in them treatment centers was O-U-T out. That's what I wanted when I was in school. I graduated at long last and went into the United States Army. I was drafted. Robert gave me some dog tags tonight. Thank you, Robert. But you see, you don't have to worry too long because I won't be in the Army very long tonight. I can promise y'all that. Came home to Memphis, little trouble in the Army, maybe a court-martial or two. Missed a ship in Japan because I was drunk. Came home to Memphis and went to work for the Memphis Fire Department. I wanted to be a policeman. Wonder how that would turn out. Went to work for the Memphis Fire Department, and I can remember it as if it were yesterday. 12 and a half years later, I was dismissed as a direct result of chronic alcoholism. You see, I didn't know that. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I turned 21 in Korea, and I was an alcoholic at that time. I just didn't know it. And I was in and my wife called it driving. I called it a beer joint. She and Walt called it a beer joint. Place up on Lamar called Reno's Drive-In. And I went and I collected muscular dystrophy, had my uniform on. A little girl in there, when they asked her for some change, she kind of squeezed me on the hand. It's my wife, Joanne, and we've been married as last April, 58 years. Stand up, honey. Now, I know very little about Al-Anon, Doris, but I can tell you about me and her. Her lifetime ambition was to get Milton sober, and we tried. We went everywhere, spent all the money we could find, time after time, just on and on, trying to get Milton. We knew we could do it. We knew we could get Milton sober. I'd get home off one of them drunks I went on. I was a traveling drunk a lot of time. I'd come home, maybe be gone a week, and go in the kids with him having the milk and bread in the house. And I was real remorseful, and I'd gathered her and them kids up in that den of mine out there in Raleigh where I live today. And I'd say, baby, I love you and these kids. And I'm going to do better. I ain't going to never drink again. I'm going to get me a job. I'm going to support you and these babies. I'm going to act better. And you know, every time I've done that a minute, you may can identify with that. You've probably done the same thing. Every time I told them out, I meant it. Every time. You see, because I didn't know about the insanity of alcoholism. Never knew that. I began to have some real hard effect of alcoholism. I began to get some drunk drivings. I don't have eight, but I had drunk driving in Mississippi, Arkansas, and Tennessee pending at the same time. All in court at the same time. And I began to hang around them honky-tonks. I love them honky-tonks, folks. I love everything about them, how they looked, how they smelled. That's where I like to be. That's where I wanted to be. And, you know, I suppose it looked the same today. I hadn't been in one a long time, but I even liked how they smelled. I was a veteran, and I went in the old Veterans Hospital in Memphis, I guess 27, 28. I didn't want to be there. And the doctor left the room and I read my chart. He had written on my chart acute gastritis. I didn't know what it was then. Hell, I don't know what it is now. But if he'd have written acute alcoholism, he'd have been right on here with me because that's what I was. I began to go in the hospital, that there were no treatment centers in, but we could go to Gartner, Ramsey, places like that, drying out houses. That's what they were. I was introduced to shock treatments, We'd have insulin shock in the morning and electric shock at night. And when I'd leave after a while, I'd be so damn rum-dum, I couldn't spell my name. I don't know what them things had done then, and I don't know now. I think about a lot of them now. I had a lot of them. They'd keep me in them place and fat me up, and I'd be out. And I knew beyond any shadow of a doubt, one thing I didn't learn, that I learned that Bill Wilson wrote it. He said, self-knowledge is not enough. But you see, I knew that when I was in place that I had enough self-knowledge, it would never drink no more. Hell, I ain't going to drink no more. Hell, I'm finally getting out of here. Been up here 90 days. I ain't going to drink no more. Wouldn't nobody drink but a fool, would they? I'd leave old Gartley Rams out on Pop, and I'd buy me two bottles of Paragark to make it home on. Now, you could buy a Paragark back in those days without a prescription. It'll give you a little jolt, not bad. It'll give you a little, start. I began to get arrested for public drunkenness. And I think we lose the most when we lose that self-respect. Now, George told me not to get up in with all that low-bottom stuff. I'm going to try to keep it kind of high. There was no big stock store out there in Raleigh that I could buy a beer any time of the day or night. I knew the lady owned it. I'd be in at 4 o'clock in the morning, maybe, and I'd had a little money. Maybe some pennies I'd robbed out of my kid's piggy bank that night. I'd get in that line, and always be some people behind you. I'd get up to the counter, and my hands would shake so bad I could not count the pennies out. But you see, I could buy me a quarter stag beer and I could make it another half a day. Alcoholism, that's what this program's about. Nothing else but alcoholism, folks. If you live in Memphis, our whiskey store opened at 8 o'clock in the morning. Not a minute before, not a minute after. And I've been in that line a minute morning. And if you go there Monday morning, there'll be some people out the back and they're hungry, they're clothing is disheveled and they're ragged. They're tired. They don't want to be out there. And I've been in that line a lot of time, and I didn't want to be out there. But you see, I knew if I could have raised $2.50 to buy me half a pint of dark eyed vodka, I could make it another half a day. Alcoholism. Old timer told me one time I didn't want to stay drunk too long. I need to get on and get sober. In the early part of 1973, I'd been down drunk about 2 days, maybe a week. I'm sure there's some folks, what being down drunk means. Up at that time, I had drank everything known to mankind, I suppose. Everything from Chivalry Regal down to Mad Dog 2020, Silver Satin, Bitter Lemon, Dr. Tishner's, Rubbing Alcohol. I was an Alcoholics Anonymous a good 5 years before I knew and understood the real difference between wanting to drink and having to drink. I drank some in my life when I really wanted to. Last 10 years of my life, I had to drink. I had no choice in the matter. I had to drink or go crazy or die or something. There was no choice in it. I had been taken to a meeting by my brother, my older brother who's dead now. I'd been taken to a meeting in the late 60s, maybe middle 60s. Went to a meeting down on Madison, Earl, and I think it was the old Memphis group at that time. And Joe and I, might have been drinking when we got there, I don't know, but we sure as hell were drinking when we left. And we thought it was a cult. We laughed, made fun of it. They even had a Bible. We thought it was a Bible study. So we didn't know no different. I meant to say one thing too early in my talk. What I had on my side back in those days was youth. I still alive here tonight. I was young and I was strong. I did what I wanted to do. He's getting them honky-tonk, them brawls, get your clothes ripped off and have a wreck and somehow make it home. And next day, you're a little bit, next day by noon, you're okay. Young, you couldn't tell me a damn thing. I knew a thing about everything. I called in a group. No, I didn't. I walked the floor that morning. I'd gotten home somewhere, and Joanne was there. I'd gotten home, and I knew in my mind, AA. I used to say I didn't know where that came from, but I know tonight it was God-inspired. Joanne was home. She was washing clothes. And I said, do you think I should call AA? She said, you might as well, because it's not going to hurt the damn thing. And I said, you know I'm too sick. In those days when I had, you know, I see some people today, they have a little slip and they drink a little beer and they come back to the group the next day. They ain't no worse for the wear, you know. When I get drunk, I'd stay drunk around the clock for a week or two and hangovers, my God, they were terrible. I'd walk the floor and tear at my clothes and wring at my hair and walk the floor, have a dry heave, couldn't sleep, couldn't eat, couldn't do nothing. And I said, honey, you know I'm too sick. She said, I told her she'd look up a number I would call. I called, and an angel answered the phone. Don't be nobody here now. I guess Walt does. Her name was B. Crane. She's dead and gone to the big meeting now. You know what B asked me? She said, Milton, are you drinking? I said, no, ma'am, I hadn't been drinking. Hell, if I hadn't been drinking, I wouldn't have called, I would have. She said, if you'll hold on, we're going to send somebody to see you, my friend. And I walked the floor some more, and I cried, and I tore some more of my clothes. Done the things we do, walked the floor, did, you know, in a cold sweat, and I called back. And B said, hold on, Milton, we're going to be there. Two men came in my home about an hour later. And right here, my friends, is what I perceive to be the primary principle in the beginning of my recovery and maybe your recovery. It's called identification. When you get to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you can't identify, you're in the wrong place. If you can't identify, you're in the wrong place. You need to go find your group where you can identify. These two men came in my home. One of them was a one-armed man named Les Branch. He's dead now. When I had a Bible under his arm, the big man Tom had a Bible under his arm, and Joe and I said, oh, God, this not the Bible. This is another, you know, place. I asked Joe to make some coffee, and she did. One armed man said, Milton, he said, I'm a chronic alcoholic. I've lost my home. I have nowhere to go. I lost my arm in a drunken accident, wrecked my car, and it turned over, and I lost my arm, on and on. But he said, the good news for you is when we leave here today, you don't have to never take another drink unless you choose to. The other man was a big man. His name was Tommy. I mean, he might still be alive. He went back to drinking pretty soon after that. Tom said, Milton, you can make it. You don't have to go as low as I went. If you're not already there, so you don't have to be there. You can. When we leave today, we're gonna read some out of this book. You don't have to never take another drink unless you want to. But more important, would you care to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, yes, sir. I sure would like to go. And I said, I'll be there for sure. And he turned, started for the door, and he turned around. He come back and said, no, left to your own devices. You probably won't go. I'll be here tomorrow night, me and my wife at 7 o'clock. Y'all be ready. They ain't asked me if I want to go to a hotel or down treatment center. And they said, we're going to take you to a meeting. And because you probably won't come by yourself. And next day I felt a little bit better. Just a little bit better, and I probably wouldn't have gone. But But I looked at there that next night, and there they were. Joy and I went to one of the oldest A groups in Memphis, Family Fellowship. They're closed today. Darcy remembers it. She's probably talked to him before. And when I got there were some old-timers there that looked like I thought alcoholics should look like. One of them had a big red nose, and they had all red-faced, and there was one lady there, and buddy, she looked like an alcoholic, I'm telling you. Had a little sign up and said, "We care." It was a speaker meeting. Old speaker was J.T. Carvey at a Walton in Plymouth, owned a Plymouth dealership in Millington. Joanne had worked with him in the retail clothing business, you know, prior to that. And when J.T. began to talk, I knew J.T. knew. He didn't know me, but I knew J.T. knew about me. He told an awful story. I'm telling you, he done lost everything, wrecked 80 cars and his usual stuff. Everybody just died laughing. And I thought, hell, ain't that funny? People, he's up a man, he's just pouring out his life, and everybody laughing. Laughter and Alcoholics Anonymous are good for the soul, folks. It's good for sobriety. When J.T. finished, old man named Tom Early there helped about as many people in Shelby County that ever did. Everybody knew Tom. He asked me if I wanted to buy a big book. I didn't know what in the hell. He might well ask me if I wanted to buy a monkey, because I didn't know. I borrowed $3.50 out of Joanne's purse, and I bought a second edition big book, which I still have today. And they charged me, it was used, and they charged me a new big book price for it, $3.50. And written in the fly leaf of that big book, that old book right up here, in the most beautiful handwriting you've ever seen, it said, "If you can stay sober for one day at a time, you may remain so for the rest of your life." And it was signed Ruth and Frank Tobin. I've asked all the old timers, Franklin, Louise, everybody, whoever knew them people, nobody knew them. I guess you may have come to the meeting and said, "The hell with it," and left, and bought a big book and left. But I sure was glad she left it for me. And when I got home that night, if you could gather up all the information that's out there today about us, you can put it all in this room. Everybody knows about drunks. Hell, they're making movies and you tell it. I went home a while back and Joanne's watching as the world turns. Guess what was on that meeting, on that screen? It's having an AMA meeting on there. They had the table over here and they're sitting around on the chairs. They weren't saying nothing, but they're having an AMA meeting. Everybody knows a lot about us. A lot of them making a lot of money out of it too, folks. They're patronizing Alcoholics Anonymous, what they're doing. This book here, my friends, the book that I have with me tonight, it's not the one I bought at my first meeting. It was a good friend who gave me this book, Jim S., down in Birmingham. This book right here is a basic textbook. We don't have any other. We got some other books that's conference approved, other books. This book, the book Alcoholics Anonymous, written primarily by Bill Wilson, is my textbook, and I hope it's yours. And I could read some of that book at night, which was the second miracle in my life, and I could read the doctor's opinion written by Dr. Bill Silkworth, who was not an alcoholic. And he's talking about Bill. He let Bill come back and hold some meetings at the Old Towns Hospital after he got sober, and he'd done it with some reservations, and he writes about those people that were there then. You know, two things about them. One, they were honest about what they said. And the other thing was that they believed in themselves. But more than that, they believed in the power that they chose to call God that had brought them back from the doors of death. And I knew that to be true. I'd been saved from the doors of death many a time, wrecking cars and shootings and scrapes like that. I carried a gun in one arm most of the time. I'd been brought back by a power greater than myself. And Dr. Silkworth writes about the phenomenon of craving. I didn't know what it meant then, but I know now. He meant by the phenomenon of craving means to me and hope for you. For whatever reason I take drink number one, it doesn't make any difference. Whatever reason me as an alcoholic has to drink number one, I'm going to have number two and I'm going to have number 82. Irregardless of anything else, irregardless of loved ones, money, sex, or whatever, I'm going to get that second and that 82nd. I don't have any choice in the matter. The only way I can be relieved of that is by a power greater than I am. I read some Bill story that night. You know, Bill was a Yankee. Excuse me. Bill was a Yankee. He was the stockbroker. He made a little money and lost a little money. But he talks about one thing that struck my opinion, and I still remember it today. He was talking about the stock market crash in 28 or 29. He said men of high finance were jumping off of the building, off the stairs. Men of high finance was committing suicide. You know what he said? Not me. It disgusts me. I'll go back to the bar. And that's the way I was. Whatever happened in my life, hell, I ain't never been close to killing myself. I'd go back to the bar. I'd give me half a pint of dark eyes. Good, bad, indifferent. More about alcoholism. Tried always to stop. I was a quitter. I was a stopper. When it got bad, I was a stopper. When I get out of jail, I'd quit. Tried always to stop. Changing brands, drinking on the job, away from home. I had a mailbox in front of my house, and I had a old tree back in the backyard, and I'd sit me a can of slits in here and a can of slits in the front. Every time I'd make a round, I'd slug in beers. And you know, I had Joanne food. She really did believe it. I told her if I just drank slits of beer, I'd be all right. And she believed that. There is a solution. My God, I want that solution, folks. Well, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I could identify with one thing. I had an honest desire to quit drinking. And without that, I wouldn't have made it. I had an honest desire to do better, honest desire to quit drinking. And then I could read what I consider the most spiritual piece of material I've ever read, regardless of any place I've ever been. And I hear this chapter misread and mispronounced. I hear it called everything, and I hear this, who wrote it. It's titled a chapter, We Agnostics. And I take that to mean if the title of that chapter is We Agnostic, perhaps the writers were agnostic, right? Bill said half of the first 100 were either alcoholics or atheist. I think Bill was an agnostic. And you know, I don't know what that meant, Holly. When I heard it in old time, I said, you act like I knew. Hell, I didn't know. But I didn't want them to know I didn't know. I think an agnostic says to me tonight, and maybe you, if you believe in the existence of God, you prove it to me and I believe it. I'm not necessarily an unbeliever. Nor am I a believer. I just don't know. If I had any conception of God, it would be farther on down the road when I got ready or whatever. And then it says, told me that you face by this self-imposed crisis, and mine was self-imposed, and maybe yours was, and that we'll suddenly realize that God either is or isn't. He's either everything or he's nothing. I got to move along. I went back to the meeting. Me and Joanne went to Family Fellowship, and man, we joined up. Man, we was carrying on. Man, we loved that group. Hell, one of the guys told me, he said, You won't make it at all? Hell, I ain't got 90 days. I wonder what I'd say. I ain't got 90 days yet. One of them asked me if I want a chair at the meeting. I didn't know a red chip from an orange chip. But we weren't there very long, so I didn't like nothing about it. They made us wash all them. They signed me and Herman to cut the grass. You remember Herman? They assigned us to cut the grass. We're the youngest. Made us wash them on coffee cups. And back in them days, they had glass cups in all the meeting halls. You had to wash them out, empty the ashtrays. And I didn't even smoke till noon every day. I didn't want to wash them old stinking ashtray. Old timer said, do it. You know, if you ask some of the young people in Alcoholics Anonymous today to cut the grass, they'd think you're a damn fool. They would. But me and Herman Hill was washing them coffee cups one night, and he said, let's just start us a group. But let me back up a little bit, too. I skipped one thing that was very important. We'd been at Family Fellowship about 80 or 90 days. In the back of my mind, I'm again to want to drink. And you know what I said to me is, I don't like them signs in the A group now. It says, think, think, think. But that's what I done was I began to think too much. Charlie Lowry, my friend who's dead now from North Carolina, said, he was Darcy's friend too. He said, any alcoholic under 9 months sobriety, don't think, ask your sponsor. And you know what I began to think? Anybody can drink a little slits. Who's it going to hurt? Who's going to find out about it? Hell, I'm old folks in my group, they all 90 years old, dumb as hell anyway. Who's going to know it? And the one thing I could depend on is true today. Even if I do get drunk, they ain't going to kick me out. If you go back to your group and you've been drunk, they ain't going to kick you out. Well, I might hurt your fiddle like I done mine, but they ain't going to run you off. I stopped over on Madison Avenue one day and had been thinking, and I forgot all I knew. I forgot about the strange mental twist that precedes the first drink. Not after I'm drunk. After I have the drink, I'm not insane. I'm intoxicated. I remembered about the man riding in the car. He was an automobile man like me and Walt and Ray. He was riding out the country one day, and he went in the place where he had sold a car before in the pretense of getting a sale out there. When he was in this place, he got hungry. He ordered him a glass of milk, ordered him a sandwich. It came and he ate it, still hungry, ordered him the same thing again. When the waitress is right over here. If I put an ounce of alcohol into my milk and drink it on a full stomach, it won't hurt me. Now my book says, I don't know what you call that. We choose to call it alcoholic insanity. It's a strange mental twist that precedes the first drink. I hear people here say, man, I had to be insane. Hell, I wrecked 40 cars and killed 8 or 9 women and all that. I done a lot of that stuff too, but I wasn't insane. I was intoxicated. And you were too. But anyway, I got that slits beer. I bought 2 cans. Within an hour, I had 2 6-packs of beer and 2 pints of whiskey. And I ran and I ran, 89 days dry. I ran them honky-tonks first week or two. I done told you how much I liked them honky-tonks. Run out of money. You finally got home. Tried to borrow some money, couldn't do that. Finally got home with Joy and them kids. Had a room out there. I lived in Raleigh then, as I do now, and home out there. About the third or fourth week, I was back in that bedroom back there. I didn't know what DTs was, but I was had. I hear people in this program say today, oh, man, I had DTs 4 or 5 times. Don't believe that. DTs will kill you. It's caused from malnutrition, long bouts of drinking and eating. I knew I was beginning to hallucinate. I hear people again say, oh, hallucinations were funny. That's bull crap. They ain't funny. They'll scare you to death if you've ever had them. I see things up above me, black, and clouds down all over me. And the fear was that was like it was alive in the room. I didn't want to die. I didn't want to go no more jails, hospital, whatever. I wanted to live. And the man who was the sponsor to me, Harold B., said, Milton, it'll be a time and a place of all us alcoholics. You won't have an effective mental defense against the first drink. Now, if you've been Alcoholics Anonymous, or you drank much whiskey, you got a mental defense against it. I guarantee you do. I did. Be a time and a place where that mental defense will not be effective. In most cases. In my case, I believe in all cases. That defense has to come from a power greater than us, we choose to call God. That's what I done. I got on my hands and knees that night in the urine and the filth and the vomit. And I said, God help me. I don't know where you are, I don't know what you are, but if you let me get up off this floor, I'll do my part from now on. I'll do my part from now on. That's been over 42 years ago, and I haven't had to have a drink since that night. Because, you see, I done two things that night. Number one, I surrendered. I don't want to step on nobody's toes, hurt nobody's feelings. If you be a real alcoholic without surrender, no sobriety. If you be a real alcoholic without surrender, very little sobriety, maybe a brief time. The other thing I did that night was I found the God of my understanding that I was to learn something about later. My grandmother had taken me to school. She raised me a lot. She had a God of her understanding. She really believed. She was really a spiritual person. 85 years old, never had drank a whiskey and cigarette in her whole life. 85 years sober. It was the God that I could bring into my life and I could believe in and I could choose to pray to. It's the same God I pray to tonight or yesterday or tonight before I got up here. I got up the next day. Harold had brought me a pint of whiskey and something to eat every day for the past, I don't know, a week or so. His wife, Betty, would fix me some food, and I couldn't eat it. He brought me a pint of whiskey every morning. I'd sip it a little bit and get off of it. I don't hear that term much in there. They used to, them old timers, you tell me, you got to get off of it. If you've been there, you know what they're talking about, too. Harold came by the house and he picked me up and said, we're going to our home group tonight. And I said, my God, Harold, I'd rather go to Alcatraz. He said, I don't give a damn. We're going to your home group. Old guy named Bob Dunover was standing on the back porch. Doris might have knew him. He was Memphis's badass. That's what he was. And he said, Milton, how you doing? I said, I'm doing all right. He said, well, I'm glad. He said, I'm glad you're back. We're doing well without you, but I'm glad to see you back. And them old timers in that group, folks, they love me enough with unconditional love. In my opinion, only found in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't buy it, you can't get it in the church, in my opinion, again. Unconditional love, one drunk for the other, irregardless of anything else, irregardless of money, creed, status, or whatever. One out and on for the other. One out of 10 for the other. Unconditional love. We have unconditional love for me that doesn't matter. And they told me that they would accept me back. And I don't have time to tell you all they told me, but they told me in no uncertain terms about this great fellowship. About this great fellowship and everything it entails. And they started out with a home group. I told him, I said, Harold, I've been coming to the meetings. He said, yeah, you've been hit and missed back on the back row. Did you know I talked one time and somewhere in the West, an alcoholic from this podium got up there and said, my name is so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic at large. Now, what in the hell is that? Alcoholic at large. They told me you got to find your home group, Milton. You got to be in attendance. You got to help them there. And when you find your home group, you begin to become a part of. There's no magic here. There's no magic in the Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't warm no chair and get sober if you be the real deal, like me and Walter. You got to get your home group, and you got to start out with the home group. Got to buy your big book. Who was it that said this weekend? I believe it was Judy. If you ain't got money to buy one, steal you one. Read that basic text. You got to help us around here, Milton. Help us with you. All we need you to do. Chair in the meeting. Help us with your money. Oftentimes we get sober. Money's a bad word in there. Hey, we don't like it. We get tight that money. Last but not least, working with others. I told Harold, Harold, I ain't been long enough to work with no others. I just had my first little while back. I don't know how to work with others. I don't know how to start. I don't know nothing. He said, my friend, that ain't going to get it. He said, when you get home, you find your book and you see read what that says. And it says that any alcoholic or ex-problem drinker, when he's properly armed with the facts about himself, I don't mean a damn thing about smoking no marijuana, eating no dope, or nothing else. I mean, if you're armed with the facts about being an alcoholic, you can easily win the confidence of another alcoholic, period. And I find that to be true. I remember my 12th step call, and I hear it in my meetings today someplace that I go, oh, we don't get no 12th step calls. I don't know how to work with others. You know better than that, folks. It's somebody here tonight you can work with if you really want to. We got a new man here tonight that needs to be welcomed by everybody here. I saw him outside smoking by himself. Go out there and greet him and talk to him. That's working with others. But anyway, man, we started out, and Joanne was the boss of the Al-Anon group, she thought, and we was moving on. We started going to conventions, and man, we're moving on. And here again, I'm getting back to where I left off. We didn't like that group. Me and Herman didn't. Charlotte Chambers, we didn't like nothing about it. Hell, them old timer. They wouldn't even talk to us right. They made us do everything, and we hated it. I did. We'd wash them dishes, and Herman said, we'll just start us. Herman, be quiet. Shh, don't let him hear that. He said, I've been reading some literature from World Service. We can start a group. And I said, we ain't got no place to meet. We ain't got no money. How are we going to do it? He said, oh, we'll do it. Joanne's aunt, let us have a warehouse out off of Thomas Street in North Memphis. I think maybe Earl's been to our meeting. And we set out, and I'm telling you this for one reason only. We was all we had. We couldn't let Jane be the treasure and let Jim do this and Jack do this. We was all them things. I was the treasure of my group the first 5 years that it was in existence. And we began to get members. John had been sober long in the rail. He'd been sober 12 years. Well, we thought that was way uptown. Walt come to our group one time. I was at Walt's first meeting. He weighed 285 pounds, red as a damn beet. He thought he was really. But anyway, John told us that, boys, we're going to have a meeting to name this group. And I thought I was going to get that choice, and I wanted to name it Mustard Seed. He said, hell, we ain't having no Mustard Seed group. I'd heard of one in Chicago. But they named it Traditions, and that's our name today, and we got a good group. I go to a lot of AA meetings, hear some speakers, and I've already told you how it was, told you what happened. I don't want to leave out how it is today. I think sometimes we get caught up in some things and leave how it is today out. Along about 5 or 8 years, Dennis, I learned the most important thing. I was given a gift. I was given a gift to learn to like being sober. When I learned to like being sober, I was on the way. I was on the way, Mike, when I learned to like being sober. I like being sober today. I like the things I do today. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love everything about it. Alcoholics Anonymous is the way of life with me and Joanne. It is my whole life, but it's the way of life I love and enjoy. I have a daughter that's a doctor now. The night she was born, I went in there. You guys probably know, it was a honky-tonk called a psycho lounge down on Madison. I went in there to celebrate the birth of my daughter and drank 2 cans of beer. Joanne was already at the hospital and I was on the way up there. I got up there 5 days later, Holly. You know what I went in that beer joint for? Drank me a cup of cans of beer and celebrate the birth of my daughter. What happened when I drank that beer? Dr. Seth worked way back out. He called it the phenomenon of craving. And when I drank number one, I was going to have number 29, and I did. Got home 5 days later, joined the baby, already gone home. My daughter was always the apple of my eye. Not that she didn't love her mother, but she was the daddy's girl and still is today. She called me today. The last thing she told me today was, she said, "Dad, I love you. I miss you." Now, you can't stand any closer to God than that, can you? Can't be any more spiritual than that, can you? Here's a young lady that grew up in Al-Anon, Alateen, in AA. She's a fine young lady. She gave me 3 of these. And they're precious, precious. And my grandson told me, my youngest told me he wanted a laptop for Christmas. Not only that, he wanted a Mac for Christmas. And I said, "Man, what do you know about a Mac?" He said, "I want a Mac, Grandy." But anyway, we get along good with my daughter. She's busy a lot. When my son was born, when my son was born in school age, we wasn't very close because he was scared of me. You know, I'd drive in the neighborhood, and I wasn't armed a lot of times. I had pistols, a shotgun, stick, knife, anything. Run from the police, and he'd be with me. He knew he loved his dad, but he was scared of me. And he was in the car with me one time when I got chased home and Joanne had all my damn clothes out in the yard and we was breaking up. That sound familiar, Judy? And he knew he was scared. The police come out and I lied to him as usual and they let me go. But anyway, he got a little bit older. And I began to notice he was a little bit different. You know, we don't approach things like that. We didn't, Joanne and I didn't. Went off to college in Atlanta. Done well down there for a while. He called and told me and his mother he was gay. Now, we accepted that pretty good. And I learned a long time ago, folks, here in this Al-Anon program and this program, I don't have to condone anything to accept it. When I can accept anything, it will no longer bother me. Truly accept it down here, it will no longer be a problem. It wasn't long until my son called me and his mother and told us he was HIV positive. Now, if you don't think that'll set you back, try it on for size. Only son, fine young man, HIV positive. Back in old years, it was, it wasn't the death penalty, but it was, they was just discovering a new medicine he takes today, and it's edgy. So, here's a young man that I had done everything in my power to help. I'd got him out of jail, sent him my credit card, paid his bills, paid his rent, got him out of jail, whatever I could do to help him, always hoping I could fix him. I just knew I could fix him, get him to, you know, see things right. I finally decided, but I couldn't do it. I went to the older members of my group. As long as I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, my home group has been my strength. That's where I go when I have problems. That's where I go. It's my home. It's my strength. That's where I go. That's where I should go. I went to my group and I talked with some of the older members, they're friends of mine. And I said, God, I can't handle this anymore. I've been hearing folks talk about turn it over, turn it over. I didn't know what they're talking about. Really, I'd act like I knew. I said, God, I can't handle this no more. I'm going to turn my son over to you. I can't do anything more about it. I'm happy to tell you that a few months later, he came home. He works for me today. The United States government sends him his medicine every month by FedEx. They send him his money by FedEx, and it is terribly expensive. All because some years ago I gave him up. He works for me today. I called him this afternoon. I know they close at 5. And I said, son, y'all doing any business? I got to go, Daddy. I said, what are you doing? I'm writing out a drive tag. I got to go. I said, hell, I'll let you go then. I ain't going. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. I'm a product of the gutter. At one time, I thought there was no hope for me. And the one thing that I always thought, and I read it in a big book years later, it was very, very definite and true, and I always thought it. And it says that a lot of us, after some period of dryness, a long period of dryness, we think we can drink again. And I always did that. I thought any time I could go somewhere and be without that stuff for a while, I could drink again. I didn't know anything about the incentive of alcoholism. Knew very little about any of that stuff. I love Mott Eagle. Hope to come back here many years to come. I love all y'all. You've been a real good audience. I'm going to tell you this now, close. What I am today, or ever hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.